Hello, and welcome to Outfield Fly Rules Podcast, the podcast to be named later. I'm Brent Blackwell, here with Christopher Jervis and TJ Alexander.
Hello.
And we're just going to be wasting time talking about whatever. First topic that we talked about is Hall of Fame, since the vote was this week. Mike Piazza and Ken Griffey Jr. elected to the Hall of Fame. Probably a shorter list than we would have liked to have seen. Any first thoughts on the vote, Chris?
I think Ken Griffey was probably the easiest vote that the association has had to make. I can't come up with any reason not to vote for him, and three people did.
Well, you got to get the David Eckstein vote in there.
Yeah, or Garrett Anderson. Yeah. You know, vote for your hometown favorite. Piazza, a lot of PED allegations against him, a lot of whispers, but probably deserving in his own right. He's one of the better catchers of all time. I would have liked to have seen a few more players. Everybody knows my stance on Tim Raines. But there are some deserving players who will probably get in next year.
Yeah, I think Tim Raines is a cinch to get in next year.
Probably Bagwell as well.
Because it's Raines' last year on the ballot, right?
I believe so.
Next year. So he'll get a bump from that. There'll be some of the older types.
There'll be some outrage, too.
Yeah.
Bagwell was only a few votes away from getting in this year.
And I think like nobody who's ever gotten to Bagwell was at 71.6%. Nobody, I think, has ever gotten there and not gotten in.
I think Bagwell fell 8 votes short, and I think I read that Tim Raines was only 13 votes short overall. So, and his just 5 years ago, he was sitting around 45%.
It's ridiculous that Jeff Bagwell is going to be on the ballot 7 years.
Yeah.
That's insane.
But hey, he had muscles.
It's true. He did have muscles. And you can't have muscles anymore. That's bad.
Not bad in the 90s.
Yeah.
Hoffman had a really high vote total, too, this year.
67. Yeah. He'll get a bump, too, because I think there's still some of that first-year thing against relievers. So that sure. They're like...
Last year's... 2017 is Lee Smith's last year eligibility there, too.
He's been trailing off.
Yeah, he's actually been dropping.
I bet he peaked early.
Trevor Hoffman will probably get in. I think you have a situation with him, two things happening at the same time. You have the first-year ballot. Nobody's going to vote for a first-year, or some guys aren't going to vote for first-year ballots. But you also have the bias against relievers. They only play every so often. They only pitch one inning at a time. But, I mean, realistically, relievers are part of the game.
He had a losing record, man. Yeah. How could you put him in the Hall of Fame?
Exactly.
He lost more games than he won.
I think with the change in the association, with the purge of some of the writers who haven't been paying attention to the game over the last several years, several being 30, 40 in some cases, and also some of the new media being added to the voting rolls, some of the writers from Fangraphs and Baseball Perspective, Dave Cameron and some of those guys who have votes now, I think you're going to see a shift in the criteria used, and I think you'll see some of these relievers getting in.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, I can't remember what it was just a bad ballot. That's all I remember. It was a horrible ballot, but it was, I think it may have been one of the three that didn't have Griffey, and it was a guy whose primary focus is he's a hockey beat writer.
Oh, nice.
Has a vote for the Baseball Hall of Fame. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Chris, too. I think Wagner, what did he pull? 10% on his first ballot?
10.5.
That's high for...
Yeah.
Higher than it used to be, anyway.
And Wagner, actually, it could be argued that Wagner, while his career wasn't as long, was more dominant during his closing career than Hoffman was. It definitely wasn't as long a career, but... You know, he had more dominant numbers in terms of how he related to how he compared to the league.
Yeah, for sure. Curt Schilling got 52% in his fifth year. I don't know if his is going up much or not. I feel like people are maybe just waiting on Schilling on other people to get out of the way.
Up 13% from last year.
I think Schilling would probably get on the ballot, get in a little bit quicker if he just shut his mouth and stay off of Twitter.
I know. God, I hate
that. As bad as I feel saying that about, you know, that being a condition, if he would just shut his mouth, he'd probably get in.
TJ, you've got the up and down numbers, right?
Correct.
How much did Clemens and Bonds pick up?
Let's see.
I know they picked up some. Clemens is at 45 now. Where was he?
They both went up 7.5% to around 45 for both of them.
And they were in their fifth year.
Fourth year, yeah, so.
Or this will be their next year. Will be their fifth year,
right? Yeah. Right. Right.
Poor Edgar Martinez, middling around at 43%. One of the best hitters of his generation.
He had a big jump too.
Yeah, Edgar's another one that, you know. Yeah, he didn't play the field, and when he did, he played it very badly. But as I wrote in the piece on outfieldflyrule.com, on when I shared my Hall of Fame ballot that I shared with the Georgia chapter of Sabre, Edgar Martinez is a DH. Yes, he doesn't play the field, doesn't play it well, but the DH has been part of the game for 40 years. You know, it's or over 40 years. It's been part of the game longer than free agency has. At some point, you have to account for the fact that it's accepted, and it's more likely that the DH is going to come to the NL and we'll all be on the same playing field than it is that it's going to go away.
Oh, it's definitely not going away.
Yeah, it's not.
It's a product people will pay more money to see.
Right.
Right.
But Edgar, he's made up some ground. He's got three more years to try and get in there. One that I thought was interesting, and he's now off the ballot, is Alan Trammell. This was his final year. And I voted for him in my particular ballot because I felt like, you know, it was his last year and he had to have his shot. He was never dominant. He was never that guy you looked at and said, I'm afraid to pitch to him. He played at a time when we were talking about it earlier, when Cal Ripken Jr. was around. He didn't have the offensive numbers of Cal Ripken Jr. He didn't have the defensive numbers of Ozzie Smith. Yet when you look at the career, he's comparable to any other shortstop in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, his I was looking at his stats before we started, and how did he not win American League MVP in 1987? I know George Bell was good for the Blue Jays that
home
year,
runs.
But Trammell's numbers that year were like
stupid,
insane good. It was Troy Tulowitzki that year, but better. Batted .343.
Yeah,
and he was always a good defender too. He and Lou Whitaker
may have been the best double play combination ever.
Yeah, they were. I think they got more attention for just being like for their longevity than they did for how good they were.
Lou Whitaker's another one who should have been at least given some consideration. You know, talking about somebody for consideration for the Hall of Fame does not mean enshrining them in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you can consider somebody and say, okay, this guy was at least good enough to look at his career and say, hey, let's talk about whether he's worthy or not. There's other guys, the David Ecksteins, the Garrett Andersons, or you know, even worse, you know, some of these people, Randy Wynn. You're not going to talk about Randy Wynn having a Hall of Fame career, but he's on the ballot.
Right.
But, you know, talking about Alan Trammell, even Jim Edmonds. Jim Edmonds is another one, you know, that had a great career.
Trammell, I never realized how good of a contact hitter Trammell was. He did not strike out much. In 87, the year he had 65 extra base hits, he had 47 strikeouts.
Yeah, that year was crazy. I mean,
DiMaggio-esque.
And he finished second in the MVP that year to Bell, All-Star, Silver Slugger. Managed to put up 28 home runs and 105 RBI on his own, and yet had an OBP over 400.
Yeah, 21 steals and only 2 caught stealing. That's an all-around amazing season. What's his what is his WAR for that season on Baseball Reference? 8.2. Yeah, that's a superstar player.
Yeah, that's worthy for considering.
Now, granted, that was his like peak year. That was his best year.
Sure.
If his whole career was like that, then he'd be Cal Ripken. But he was still really good for a long time. He's always a good player. Yeah, it's a shame that he fell off the ballot. But hopefully, the veterans committees of the future will have a little more sense.
Who voted for Garrett Anderson? That's so weird. Somebody only watched that All-Star game that year. It's the only baseball game that.
Oh, let's say this about Garrett Anderson. You know, you don't consider him as a Hall of Fame hitter, but I think he ended up with close to 2,500 hits for his career. It's not like he was a scrub. He had I think a lot of Atlanta fans are a little bit jaded by his career because of what did here in Atlanta, or at least what he didn't do here in Atlanta. But if I remember, he had close to 2,500 hits, something like that.
Oh, he had some good years there around 2000 when everybody had good years.
He was good, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, he had 2,500 hits, 287 home runs. So, I mean, it's not like he was he was Rafael Belliard out there or something. But it'll be interesting the next couple of years. You know, Griffey and Piazza are off the ballot now. We have three more guys coming on next year who really deserve some consideration. But we still have Bagwell, Raines, and Hoffman all at 67% or higher. Bagwell and Raines are probably going to make it next year if their gains are any indication. Yeah. Hoffman will be close.
He'll be on the cusp.
Hoffman may actually lose some votes because with the guys coming on next year, Pudge Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez and who's the other guy? Vlad Guerrero. Vlad Guerrero will be a...
Is he on next year?
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero next year.
Yeah.
Will be probably one of the big ones to talk about. He doesn't have some of the counting numbers as some of the other guys, but his rates are off the chart.
So, this will not be a popular opinion, probably, but I think Larry Walker should go in before Vlad Guerrero.
I went back and forth on Walker, and the only reason I didn't include him on my ballot was simply I wanted to make sure that the guys who had been overlooked previously made it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm kind of shifted him around. I think Larry Walker is perfectly deserving of definitely consideration and possibly even enshrinement. A lot of people are going to give him some flack about playing in Colorado for a long time. But if you use numbers like WRC Plus and OPS Plus and other metrics that are calculated to account for park factors and league factors, that takes those Colorado is taken into consideration when looking at some of those right. numbers, and he's well above Hall of Fame caliber in many of those numbers.
Yeah, and his numbers. He was a hell of a good ball player before that.
Yep.
To Montreal. He had some great years early.
So I just pulled up Larry Walker's splits for his career. Now, as a hitter at home, he was off the charts amazing. Right. But on the road, his career, now this includes his time in Montreal too, but on the road, he batted .278 with a .370 on base and a .495 slugging percentage, which is pretty good. And I had previously had looked this up and tried to find a baseball player with very similar career numbers overall. And at least in terms of on-base percentage and slugging percentage, George Brett, .369, .487 for his career. So Larry Walker, away from Coors, or at least on the road in his career, was basically what George Brett was his entire career, which is a great hitter. Now, it wasn't an easier offensive era.
Right.
It was a more favorable offensive era, but still, that's a... If you've looked at Larry Walker's numbers, you're not making the argument that he was a product of Coors Field at all.
Yeah, also, Larry Walker was a very good hitter before he ever went to Coors Field.
And the other thing you don't hear enough about with Walker is his defense. He won 8 Gold Gloves. Yeah. And I forget where I read this. I thought it was interesting, though, but it was... you know how outfielders get talked about for having strong arms, like Ichiro and Vlad, and Larry Walker also had a very strong arm. They don't always have the same level of accuracy. I feel like Ichiro was very accurate
right.
with his throws.
Right.
Vlad Guerrero has as many errors as outfield assists in his career because as often as he would nail a guy at third, he would also launch it into the dugout or whatever.
Hit Keith Olbermann's mom.
Yeah.
It's the same guy who swung at pitches after they hit the ground 3 feet.
Right. And he was always a reckless player, and that's why it was fun to watch him because he was... All the other players were trying to be smart, and he was just out just doing instincts and everything. Right. It was fun to watch him. But Larry Walker, I'm just going to find his assists and errors, because it's... I think it's pretty staggering that Larry Walker was as good as Vlad at throwing people out, and was much more accurate when he did.
And on top of that, I mean, and it happens with them sometimes too, is those players, you start seeing guys refusing to take the base on them.
Right.
So sometimes those numbers will drop, you know, suddenly the assists go down. Well, it's not that he got any worse throwing out runners. They just said, hell, I'm not going to run.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame numbers aren't looking good for old Larry.
Yeah.
3% up to 15, his seventh year on the ballot next year.
So. Yeah, he's probably not going to make it, but he's worthy. One of the guys that dropped off this year, too, is Mark McGwire is now off the ballot under the new rules. Out in his 10th year rather than his 15th.
Tim Raines. I would have. Not a huge fan. I would have liked to see him in. Deserving for sure.
I think McGwire. Some guys could make the Hall of Fame based on records they set, and McGwire set a record. You know, and whether it was PED enhanced or not, one can argue that. But Mark McGwire was hitting mammoth home runs when he was a rookie in 1987. You know, he still holds the rookie record for home runs when he was 40 pounds lighter. He was one of the top single season record home run hitters in college baseball as well, if I recall.
Yeah,
he's always been a prolific home run hitter.
And that was one of the most, I mean, aside from anything that was Braves related for me being a Braves fan, that was probably the most captivating moment in baseball was that season. Yeah. So McGuire. And the way it all went down and them doing it against each other in the same park.
I remember where I was when it happened. I was sitting in a Hooters at Cumberland.
I was going to say, I was 13, but I bet you I was not at Hooters. I don't think. But, yeah, I mean, that season alone, especially then, we're looking in hindsight, it's a little different. But then nobody knew anything about PEDs or steroids or anything.
Right.
It was just
at the time, watching those two
go at it.
And then some guy nosing around in a locker saw a bottle of something he shouldn't have seen.
Right.
Now nobody can make the Hall of Fame. Nobody from the 90s. Because Greg Maddux took steroids, according to some writer. Well, take that back. He left Greg Maddux off his ballot because he can't be sure that nobody during the 90s didn't take steroids.
So here's a question. Will McGuire ever make it in? I know he's off the ballot now.
Yes.
You think he will?
I think he will.
When?
I don't know. It's 20 years from now.
Okay. Yeah. You think it'll be like a blanket of...
Yeah, they'll
let's
be
let
lots
in everybody.
Yeah. I mean... Didn't.
Or create a PED wing. You know, that's the best way around it. You know, one thing that people forget, the Hall of Fame...
Can we put Mantle in?
Yeah, no doubt. One thing people forget, though, is the Hall of Fame, in addition to listing great players, it's a museum to the game.
Right.
And
yeah.
The PED era happened. It's 20 years. It's a, you know, it's a sixth of the existence of the game. It happened, and to ignore it and to pretend it didn't is just...
You don't have to be proud of it. You just have to say this is what baseball was.
Right.
And
it's hard to get the Cooperstown. That's kind of my point with the 98 thing is that when I ever get to go there, I want to be able to read about
what happened. It's like 98 didn't happen.
Don't take it away from me. Yeah. Jeez.
I want to know
what
was going on.
17 hours there.
Right.
And I see more people voting for Garrett Anderson than Mark McGuire. For the Yeah, McGuire was, he's now off the ballot. Another one, let's see, Trammell's off the ballot. Edmonds is now off. He didn't hit the 5% this year, which is
it's not surprising. I always thought he was a little overrated. I thought his defense was overrated, and his offense was
some of the best plays I've ever seen.
He was Web Jim good.
Yeah,
what I always called him.
But
Andrew Jones had caught balls standing up. Right, Edmonds would have had to dive for.
Right.
Yeah,
he was really good at diving for balls.
I don't think not being Andrew Jones though
it's not a euphemism.
Yeah. I don't think not being Andrew Jones is a good enough reason to kind of fault somebody, though. I mean, there's a lot of people who weren't Andrew Jones, you know, including Andrew Jones later in his career.
Yeah. Ken Griffey Jr., not Andrew Jones in the field, so not that good. Yeah.
I mean, the only other big names that are off the ballot on their first time, Mike Sweeney and Nomar is gone.
I'll give you one that was an interesting one that I actually had to look at because I thought he was on a Hall of Fame arc. When he first started and was playing about 6 or 8 years in, was Jason Kendall.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Really
and he just fell off that last half of his career.
I remember, would that have been like, was he like late 90s? Was that around when he was? Okay, so I had this computer game from old IBM or whatever in the mid 90s. It was Tony La Russa Baseball. And it was a great like sim game. And I remember I would always build these super teams by forcing other teams to trade with me. So I would trade completely useless players for best players. And I remember I would always go towards like Jason Kendall for catcher or, you know, because I think in the 90s I just didn't like Mike Piazza because Dodgers and Mets. I think that's why I just didn't like Mike Piazza. But I would always pick Jason Kendall on my teams because it would be fun to get Jason Kendall to like 3,000 hits over a 20-year sim or whatever. And he always got there every time I ever tried it. So, yeah, I thought he was on a similar path and then it just... tailed off.
I actually had to look at him when I saw his name on the ballot. I was like, okay, let me look and see what happened because all I remember, you know, and this gets back to faulty human memories, you know, I remember him having those good years. Nobody ever remembers somebody falling off the cliff, and that's what happened with him. Another one that's off is Mike Hampton.
With Kendall, I remember that ankle injury.
Yeah, but, that was gruesome. That may have been
that was rough.
But you know what? That may have been the fall because. Kendall prior to that was a guy who could beat out infield hits. He was a stolen base guy. You know, he was hitting triples. That's a catcher hitting triples. This, you know, nobody had been doing that since Biggio was a catcher.
Yeah, it looks like it really drops off after Pudge, Manny, and Vlad next year because who's next? Maybe Javier Vasquez is the next best candidate. JD Drew.
Take out even number of years. He's amazing.
Yeah, one of our better trades.
Two of our better trades.
Yeah.
God bless Frank Wright.
I take that back. That second trade.
Well, nobody's listening now.
That second trade that second trade only brought us a year of with Melky Cabrera because of that second trade. I had to watch Melky.
You found a Brave I like less than Garrett Anderson.
Melky,
good job.
Yeah, yeah, he's he definitely wore the least favorite Braves hat for a year.
So we have three possibles coming on next year who could make it. Manny probably is not going to make it. I mean, Manny's numbers.
If you're holding off all these other guys,
Pudge will make it next year.
I think Pudge should make it.
Yeah.
Manny is. I don't know if Pudge will make it next year. I think he'll make it in his second year because you're going to have those morons who again do the first year thing. If Christy Mathewson wasn't a first vote, then how can you know? If he wasn't unanimous, then how? It's stupid the way some of these guys think. But I think Pudge belongs there. I think Vlad has a good argument, and I would have no problem seeing him there. Manny is an interesting story for the simple reason that he's Manny. There's a lot of ways you can go with that. But the PED with him is pretty blatant.
Yeah, but I think that the fact that he's never really hid from it too much, people may almost respect him for it.
He definitely should be in.
He should be in. He's one of the best right-handed hitters ever.
He's the best statue I've ever seen to hit a baseball. You know,
no movement.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest plays ever was Johnny Damon throwing the ball to the cutoff guy, the shortstop, and Manny Ramirez caught it with his glove like 10 feet in front of him and dove to catch it.
Why, Manny?
Why?
And Manny is entertaining, too. I've seen him on what was it? I think David Letterman's old show a couple of times, and he's a pretty entertaining guy.
Yeah, I'm not seeing...
Not a whole lot after that.
More guys associated with great trades for the Braves. Edgar Renteria.
Now, this is for 2017, right?
Yeah, this is next ballot. Edgar Renteria, which I, for some reason, thought he was still hanging in there for some reason.
The Braves have an opportunity. You know, the Braves have picked up a bunch of players. Julio Teheran's from Colombia. There's a few international signings they've made from Colombia. And Edgar Renteria runs some baseball camps and training schools in Colombia, in the Cartagena area, Barranquilla area. And the Braves really probably should partner up with him and get down there because there's a lot of good talent on the Caribbean coast of Colombia right now. Right there in Colombia and Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to get in there and set up some type of academy before somebody else does.
I'll tell you, one of the things I'll be most interested to see next year is how Clemens and Bonds continue to climb.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing about McGuire that I was asking you about, Brent, earlier was I think if Bonds and Clemens get in, you know, inside of 10 years,
then everybody starts.
They forget about McGuire.
Yeah.
He's out.
Yeah.
There's no good. There's not going to be.
Palmeiro's off. Sosa's not going to make it.
Right.
Sosa off the ballot.
They're
45%.
They're 4 years in. I mean.
Yeah, but they were also at 10% just a couple of years ago. So their numbers are going up. I think.
That's what I'm saying. I think they'll both be in.
I think people are starting to realize, okay, there is a difference between Clemens and Bonds and then say Sosa, Palmeiro, and McGuire. Clemens and Bonds were clearly the best players in the game at their respective positions before they started using.
If you could look at their careers and erase PEDs from your memory, you could argue for either one of them to be the best at their position ever.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds, prior to 98, it's been generally accepted that Bonds started using at the end of the 1998 season. He was tired of seeing all the accolades going to McGuire and Sosa. He decided he wanted to get paid. There was a great interview with an excerpt of Bonds having dinner with Griffey and said, hey, I'm just trying to get paid now, trying to take care of my family. Decided to start using. And prior to, from 86 to 98, Bonds was already he was the only 400 home run, 400 stolen base guy in the history of the game. We're talking about greats like Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, guys like that. And he was the only 400 player already in his career at that point. There's no question that Bonds was a Hall of Famer in my mind prior to using steroids. Some people might say you look at his whole career rather than what he did up to that point. But if you use that argument, is Ken Griffey Jr. a Hall of Famer? Ken Griffey Jr. had a Hall of Fame career 10 years into his career. But the final third of his career, he was roughly B.J. Upton.
Yeah, he's not good.
If you look at his whole career, was he, you know, he was a Hall of Famer for his first 10 years. If you discount the last 6 years he played, are you going to rule him out because he was really, really bad then?
I think one issue with a lot of the debates over certain things, now it's not at the heart of the Bonds or the Clemens debate because they're clearly like elite among right. their position. But like, how deep should a position go in the Hall of Fame?
Right.
Like, Mark McGwire is not a top five all-time first baseman. He's maybe not a top 10 all-time first baseman, but he's probably top 20. And should that be enough? Like, should Cooperstown enshrine the guys who are top 10, top 15, top 20 at their position? Or
a guy says yes. A lot of it depends on the position, too. Yeah. Like, where's Craig Biggio going to be? Second base.
Right. Right.
Who's the 20th best second baseman of all time? Right. You know what I mean? Is that person deserve to be in?
Maybe, and you have a lot not. Of guys in there now who are there just because they played in a dead ball era when stat accumulation was the biggest thing. Right now, it looks like catchers are somewhat underrepresented in the Hall of Fame. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, how many players should there be at each position?
I think a lot of people will like look at a player. Like I'm looking at the – I've pulled up the Jaws leaderboards on right. Baseball Reference, which are awesome. And it's Jay Jaffe's system right. of rating players for the Hall of Fame.
Of, I think, Baseball Perspectives.
Yeah, it's I mean, you don't have to go strictly by it, but it's a good ranking system. Catchers, you know, your top three are Johnny Bench, Gary Carter, Pedro Rodriguez, and then Carlton Fisk and Mike Piazza, Yogi Berra. So it's the list looks, it's got the right names at the top. Ninth all time is Joe Mauer. And I think a lot of people are going to say Joe Mauer, you know, he's not Johnny Bench.
Right.
I watch Joe Mauer play. I watch Johnny Bench play. He's not that kind of player. But I think people's definition of Hall of Famer has gotten more stringent sure. over the years. 30 years ago, you didn't have to be Johnny Bench to be in the Hall of Fame. Johnny Bench was the best of the best.
Right.
But you could be, let's just scroll down, you could be, catchers, like you said, are underrepresented. But, I mean, Ray Schalk is in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Rick Farrell, Roy Campanella had a short career. Roger Bresnahan is right. in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, Joe Mauer doesn't have to be Johnny Bench, but he's maybe as good a player as Mickey Cochran, who's in the Hall of Fame sure. and a good player.
There's 17 catchers in the Hall of Fame, 21 first basemen, 21 second basemen, only 16 third basemen in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I knew it was under.
24 shortstops, 21 left fielders, 24 center fielders, 24 right fielders, and one DH. So you can see that a couple of positions are, most of them are right around, you know, 20, 21. But catchers and third basemen are a little bit underrepresented. And then, you know, designated hitter, I wouldn't say it's underrepresented. It's right. just that the position yeah. just started 40 years ago, and you're just now getting guys who have put together great careers solely as a DH.
Right.
And that's just going to continue. David Ortiz is going to be coming on the ballot in a few years.
Right.
And he's only played 10% of his career games in the field.
Right.
You know, if Edgar Martinez isn't good enough, is Dave Ortiz good enough?
Right. Yeah, it was the talk about McGwire that made me kind of bring this point up, because and Palmeiro too, which is, you know, they don't have to be Gehrig or Fox, but Jake Beckley is in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Bill Terry, I think they're better. I think they're at least more important to baseball history than Bill Terry.
And that's one of the factors to consider. Is not just numbers, but did they have an impact on the game?
Yeah.
Did Mark McGwire have an impact on the game of baseball? You could say, and same thing for Sammy Sosa, I'm not necessarily a fan of including Sammy Sosa in the Hall of Fame, but I understand that what the 1998 season did and what those two did chasing the home run record to bring baseball back from the 94 work stoppage. You know, they, for lack of a better term, they saved the game. They brought it back to the forefront.
I think it comes down to, well, for me, I know I'm an inclusionist because I think the Hall should have more players enshrined for people to learn about. But with I look at it like this: if an alien landed on Earth and said, "I want to learn about baseball," and went to Cooperstown to go to the Baseball Hall of Fame and said, "Okay, here's the room. These are the best players. Are the best players in there?" Like, if an alien said, "I want to learn who the best players were to ever play this game," and they go in there, they're not going to find Barry Bonds, they're not going to find Roger Clemens, and that's my issue with it. Is that it's to be a museum, to be a place of learning, they're failing at their job of teaching us who the best players were. Which means the not voting someone in turns out to be more of a punitive thing. It's a punishment for them because of something they did.
Well, it almost gets back to what baseball did for the first 60 years of its existence or 100 years of its existence, exercising control over other people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of players who are in the Hall of Fame simply because they played against half of the population. They didn't have a chance to lose their jobs to somebody because half the population was prevented from ever playing the game. So, maybe not half the population based on representation, but you get the point. I agree. It's a museum for learning about the game, and if you're not teaching the game, if all you're doing is teaching the greatest accumulators of numbers, it's all about context. Context matters.
Yeah, and I mean, the rules they put in place are there for a reason. And they said, what is it, 5 years? You have to play 5 years?
To have played 10 years.
10 years.
Yep, and you have to have been out of the game for the last 5 years.
That's right.
Yep.
So for me, it always boils down to, kids 50 years from now know about this player because of how good he was?
Right.
And if the answer is yes, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Know about this player and how great he was.
And I understand.
He's still relevant 50 years from now.
I understand, you know, getting back to the McGuire-Sosa-Palmeiro argument, I understand people making an argument about, you know, PED may have led to this guy accumulating stats he would not have gotten. And that's where I think Clemens and Bonds are different. They were already great before.
Yeah.
You can argue that using steroids kept Palmeiro on the field long enough to accumulate 3,000 hits and 500 home runs, or that it allowed McGuire to get to almost 600 home runs. You can argue that. But there were other factors involved during that time, too. You know, the steroid era, everybody points to, mid-90s. But it actually goes back to steroids have been in the game for 50 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tom House admitted to using steroids in the early 70s, mid-70s.
House said that it was rampant in clubhouses in early 70s. So most people misdefine the steroid age in baseball.
The steroid age really started beginning. As a matter of fact, one of the big arguments recently has been Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. And some of the accusations in the Dowd report are that Pete Rose himself was introducing PED into clubhouses as early as 1986. So the steroid era can be said to run from, you know, probably about 1988, 1989 to the, 2000, 2005, something like that?
I would say
probably 2005.
Earlier odds.
Yeah, Bonds set the record in 2001. And there's probably not a question that
he may
have been involved. But there were other things happening then. You had teams building smaller stadiums. You had teams that were building stadiums that used to be 410 feet to straightaway center were now 401.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a matter of the dimensions. They were building shorter power alleys. Even something as simple as the outfield wall. You used to have outfield walls that players had to climb up on top of to make catches. You know, you had walls that were 11 feet tall.
Right.
Now, a player can reach up and snatch one back with a simple leap.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I think that wraps up Hall of Fame talk, maybe?
Sure.
Anything else we were wanting to get to? TJ prepared us a little game for me and Chris to play.
Not the game as much, but it's all Hall of Fame related, too, so that'll be a good end to that. Did y'all see where Griffey and Manny were the highest and lowest draft picks?
Piazza?
Yes. Yeah. So, y'all know who they were before? I can give you draft picks in years. I looked it up.
Ooh, yeah, do that.
Number two overall draft pick in 1966.
Number two draft pick in 1966. So, probably made the majors around... Oh, is it Reggie Jackson?
It's Reggie Jackson.
Nice.
And the lowest overall draft pick was 574, drafted in 1985.
Wow. Ooh.
90. That'd have been... when did Kirby Puckett start playing? No.
He was in the majors, I think, around that time. Because they won a World Series in 87. Yeah. Let's see. Drafted in 85, you think maybe in the majors as early as 87?
87, 88.
I don't think it's any of the Braves' three pitchers because I think Maddox was a big name or prospect, I think. Smoltz was kind of buried, but I don't... 85 sounds too early.
Clavin was an early pick, too, I think.
Yeah, because you had to sign him away from the NHL. You had to give him money.
Yeah.
Randy Johnson? He was... I don't know.
Johnson was drafted by the Braves, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
And then went
college.
Went somewhere else.
He went to, where did he play? USC? Cal? Or,
yeah, I think it was USC.
That's weird. Imagining Randy Johnson hanging out in L.A. for several years. And then, yeah. A lot of birds to kill out on the beach with fastballs.
Craig Biggio.
No, it's John Smoltz.
Well, there you go.
Is it John Smoltz? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Well, that was anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I got a couple of these. Y'all. These will probably be easier for y'all. Right, we'll make y'all name. Y'all know the inaugural class? You name all five.
Ruth, Cobb, Mathewson, Johnson,
and Young.
Oh, wait. I feel like we're missing. Honus Wagner had to be
miss,
in there.
Miss one. Honus Wagner's fifth.
Okay. Who's not? Cy Young is not.
Young got almost, like, no votes in that first year, which is bizarre.
He didn't even win his own award.
Right. I was trying to see where Randy Johnson went to college. I thought it was USC, but then it didn't sound right.
Arizona State or USC? I think it's one of those. I think it's USC. I think it is USC.
Yeah, you're right. USC.
Okay.
Who's got the most hits all time that are out of non-Hall of Famers besides Pete Rose?
Derek Jeter.
Let's say they have to be on the ballot. They have to have at least started eligibility.
Palmeira?
Yeah, Palmeira.
What's his number? Is it like probably...
Palmeiro's around 3,100.
It's 3,020. 3,020.
Derek Jeter is at 3,600, but he's not on the ballot yet.
Most home runs besides Bonds, at least 1 year of eligibility.
McGuire's at 583. We're not talking about the recently enshrined Griffey,
is it also Palmeiro?
No, yeah. This is current. No, it's not Palmeiro.
McGuire's at 583. Who has more than that?
Sosa has more.
Same as Sosa.
Sosa's over 600.
Yeah, that's right. He's over 600. That's right.
Highest batting average with over 3,000 plate appearances, not in the Hall of Fame.
Sosa's not on the ballot anymore. Does that count?
Yeah. He's just gone through his eligibility. Yeah.
Sosa's still on, right?
No, he fell off.
He got taken off.
Yeah.
What's the cutoff?
5%.
Yeah.
He didn't hit 5% last year. He wasn't on this year's ballot.
Sosa wasn't?
No.
Oh, weird.
He fell off last year. What was that question?
Highest batting average for a career, over 3,000 plate appearances. And all the rule is they can't be in the Hall and they had to have had at least 1 year of eligibility.
Takes Joe off.
Yeah, it does take Joe off. This one is... I need to give you all hints for this one, I think.
Okay. Look at the era.
Oh, the era is just like the beginning of the live ball era. So like 1920 to when he stopped playing. Yankees, Red Sox, Giants, Phillies, Dodgers, Giants.
Nobody wanted him?
Nobody wanted him. Career batting average of 349.
Lefty O'Doul.
Yep.
Nice.
Lefty O'Doul. Well done.
Yeah.
He later went on to create a beer.
His best years were with the Phillies, I believe. I'll look up his career now.
I was looking at Hugh Duffy.
We're done on him.
These are easy. Most wins for a pitcher that's not in the Hall with at least 1 year on the ballot.
Clemens.
Most strikeouts.
Clemens.
Yeah. What about most strikeouts for a player?
Not on the ballot or currently
McGuire?
On the
McGuire?
Career, most strikeouts. Spent at least 1 year on the ballot.
Reggie Jackson.
He's in the Hall, though.
He's in the Hall.
Okay, not in the Hall. Y'all confusing me with all these numbers and stuff. Y'all should just watch the game.
Oh. Strikeouts. Most strikeouts.
Sammy Sosa is going to be up there.
Sammy Sosa.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And then I found this during the podcast.
Because they made Rob Deere stop playing.
Highest career OPS for everybody that's not in the Hall that's been eligible.
I would say Palmeiro. No. Oh, that's too quick. I said that too quick.
Highest career.
Other than Bonds.
Oh, I said it's no. I shouldn't shake my head for podcasts, probably.
We should do that. That's avant-garde podcast.
Oh, besides Bonds. I'm sorry. I didn't say that.
Walker will be up there, but I don't think it's him.
Helton? No, Helton's not eligible.
Sosa, I don't think. Sosa didn't have the OBP to drive his OPS high. High OBP is what it's going to take, probably.
Jason Giambi eligible yet? I don't know.
McGriff's not going to be up there.
He's still like hanging in there as a... I don't even know what he does anymore.
Highest OPS, not in the Hall of Fame, has to have been on the ballot, not named Bonds.
Is it Lefty O'Doul?
Not Lefty O'Doul.
I'm staring at it. It's 945. That's really good.
Not as good as this guy.
So not Palmeiro, not...
Chipper Jones.
He's not eligible.
Oh, yeah. This guy's number 9 all-time in career OPS. and he is off the ballot.
McGuire?
Mark McGuire. It'll be Manny after next year. Manny's number 8.
Well, there you go.
Lefty Abdul had a hell of a year in 1929. Batted 398, 32 home runs, hit 254 hits, which may have been the record at the time. 32 homers, 122 RBIs. Finished second in the MVP vote. Who the hell beat him?
In 1920, Garrett?
Rogers Hornsby. Oh, just because he was Rogers Hornsby. Right. That's why he won.
You'll get a car.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Yeah. He had a year of 368, 383. Lefty Abdul. Good hitter for like a minute. All right, let's see. That's fun. Is that all you got?
That's all I got. All
right.
Well done, sir. Well done, sir.
Chris, what news do we have from the Atlanta Braves lately?
Well, we have apparently signed some pitchers.
That's not like us.
Yeah, no. What can I say? Recently, we've signed the funny hat-wearing Alex Torres. Back in December, picked up Rule 5 pick from the New York Yankees, Evan Ruckage. Ruckage?
Don't look at us.
Yeah, you're
the Rutsky. Evan Rutsky.
There's no S.
I'm the one that...
you told us how to say it earlier, right?
Yeah, what can I say? I'm not paying attention.
Yeah, that guy's going to make me root for Ian Kroll.
Picked up Gordon Beckham. Everybody knows about the Gordon Beckham signing. Good utility signing. Can play multiple positions.
Georgia boy.
Yeah. Good Georgia boy. Probably not as good a signing in reality as the name. Beckham is one of those guys who comes with a better...
You think people asking about Jace Peterson being... Moved because of that signing and just not knowing.
I think it's a combination of...
They're not the same.
No, they're not the same. I mean, Peterson is...
useful?
Yeah. in well-managed situations, yes, he's useful. But Peterson is young enough that he could probably improve a little bit to be maybe an Omar Infante type for a team. But if he's going to be an Omar Infante type for a team, why don't we just keep him and let him be our Omar Infante? I think...
Yeah, Peterson, man, I think we should. Yeah,
I think Peterson... is actually a good piece off the bench. I don't think he's an everyday player. And I think he showed that when he played every day last year. He wasn't awful, but, you know, I think we've also been spoiled by the fact that we had Dan Uglett for the last several years. So.
Beckham's fine to have waiting in the wings, too. I mean, he's anybody who played Bill Infield with MLB experience is good to have in your organization somewhere. Yeah.
Beckham?
Beckham's fine to have, but it's a... Nobody has to make room for Beckham. You don't have to make room for a guy like Beckham.
And this is very similar to what we did, what the Braves did going into last season. They're getting veteran players who have experience, who've played on playoff teams, who can play multiple positions. They're getting guys who can be moved at the deadline so that they can get more new players. Gordon Beckham probably, if I had to guess right now, doesn't finish the season as an Atlanta Brave.
Right.
He's going to go in, he's going to play here and there, and then there's going to be injuries, and then there's going to be a playoff team that needs to fill a spot somewhere, and Gordon Beckham's going to be shipped off, and we'll get a C-level prospect for him.
Right.
And it's all
about... We'll get a Gordon Beckham for him.
Yeah. It's all about keeping the process rolling, though. That's where he fits in. We, they signed David Holmberg to a minor league contract. Have no idea.
I don't know who that is.
Nor do I.
Let's see. I'm going to go find out.
You find that out. We brought back the once great Emilio Bonifacio, who many people at one point thought was our leadoff hitter. That was a failed experiment. But Bonifacio is another guy, plays multiple positions, has good speed.
He can be off the bench.
He can be a useful player. He's probably, again, a player who's not actually as good as what his reputation in the past has been. But he's a functional player that serves a purpose on the bench. Or serves a purpose on the team, I'm sorry.
Also, this is definitely somebody I feel like that can play a lot. Rack up numbers.
Who's that? Bonifacio. Yeah. He can take advantage of shifts and things like that, too. Right. So he's a good guy. We picked up, we signed Alex Torres. Again, the guy with everybody knows him as the one that wears the funny padded hat.
Right.
I looked him up earlier. He's not very good.
Torres?
Yeah.
His
ERA, you look up his basic stats, and his ERA last year was like pretty good, but it's, I don't think it's sustainable. I think there's a reason he was freely available and only signed a minor league contract.
Right.
Because of the hat?
Right.
Exactly, because of the hat.
I worked for Jamiroquai, so I don't know. I feel like you could get success off of weird hats.
You said Jamiroquai, right?
Yeah.
Jamiroquai. Rootkidge.
Yeah.
Rootkidge. Also signed from Colorado, I believe, was his last stop. Julius Chacon. That's how I'm saying it until somebody tells me otherwise. Signed him to a minor league contract. That could be one. He's a guy who about every other year has a good solid year. His counting numbers, some of his ERA numbers might be a little bit high, but that's kind of driven by some home run issues. But it seems like every other year I remember him having a decent year.
Yeah, he's like he's an all right guy.
Yeah.
To throw out there fifth.
Kyle maybe. Kendrick's another name that picked up. I looked at Kendrick a couple of days ago. People remember him from his run with Philadelphia in his, I think, second year in the league. He had a pretty solid, maybe a 3.22 ERA, but the peripherals are really kind of bad on him. He's not really as good as a couple of his numbers show.
Yeah, when we were talking about Chacin and or Chacon.
There we go.
It's somewhere, there's a spectrum, and his real name is somewhere between Chacon and Chacin.
That's I'm going to call him Shaka Khan from here on.
I do like him because it finally gives us a JH player. Johnny Peralta, and there's another Johnny somewhere that have the H after the J in the first name. We finally have one in Julius.
Right.
I've been wanting one on the team for years. But yeah, I like Chacin better than Kendrick for a fifth starter.
Well, adding to the name issues for whoever's drawing up the whoever's putting the names on the back of the jerseys this year, we also picked up Alexi Ogando.
Oh, yeah.
Signed him to a minor league deal. That actually has some potential to be a pretty good deal. Ogando, he's had some injury issues, but the guy throws hard. Throws hard. And
did he have good years in Texas?
Okay, like sure.
Did. I think he did.
I don't have that right.
He did. He was a 4-win player in 2011. Started 29 games for the Rangers. 3.51 ERA. That's good.
Yeah, he's Ogando is a guy who all of these are low risk signings.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The worst thing, half of them are minor league deals, so it's not going to cost us anything unless they make the major league roster. There's no real downside, and all of them have the potential again either to stick with the team and give us some innings and. Or to be moved. And that's one of the things that a lot of, you know, people have been laughed about the Braves stockpiling pitchers. But one of the reasons we've had to stockpile pitchers, you know, we've got Bud Norris that we also signed during the offseason. Bud Norris is not a flashy pitcher. He's not a sexy signing. But he's a guy that will allow the Braves to not give innings to young pitchers.
Right. That's his purpose here. Yep, his purpose is to...
You go out there and throw 200.
Yeah.
Right.
And that will allow some of the young pitchers like Wisler and Fultonavics and some of the others, Williams Perez, to develop. They were thrown into a situation last year that they may not have been ready for. They learned, but maybe they need a little bit more seasoning.
Correct.
Yeah, where's Yvan Hernandez? He'll pitch forever.
Yeah.
It's good. Bring him in. He'll start 162 for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's we also, like I said, the Bud Norris signing. So there's been some signings right now. I think the Braves are going to now. They're still probably looking to move Swisher and or Bourne.
The second anything remotely good comes for either one of them,
yeah,
dump them.
I think the moves that the Braves make are going to be dependent on whether they can get one of those guys moved, because that opens up not only the roster spot but also money.
We're pretty much already prepared to pay their full salaries for
the
season.
We're going to Derek Lowe them. Yeah.
So if anyone is willing to pay any money whatsoever,
we're going to do what we did with Derek Lowe. When we
or give us, yeah.
Derek Lowe was making $15 million and we sent him off to Cleveland and we paid $10 million of that.
Yeah.
And we're going to end up doing that with one of these guys. But that frees up a roster spot and $5 million.
What are they at, 12 or 14?
Who's
that? I was going to say bring the contracts for them too, just in case anybody didn't know about the plan.
Swisher is at $15 million for this year.
I will go to Outfield and Fly Rule where we have this data.
Bourne, yeah, I'm surprised you didn't suggest that. Swisher's at $15 million for this year. Bourne is at $14 million for this year. But both of them have vesting options that will kick in if they receive 550. If they receive 550 plate appearances. So if either one of those guys gets 550 plate appearances, their vesting option automatically kicks in.
What's that?
And that will be $12 million for each of them, I believe.
Yeah,
so we're talking about another 12. Yes.
Right, so you can't let them back.
Right. So the best thing to do for them, and you know, if we can't trade them in this preseason, and I don't think we'll be able to without eating all of it, for the simple reason that there's free agents better than them available.
Yeah.
Chip better and cheaper. And a team, if a team's option is to trade for Nick Swisher or Michael Bourne, or to go out and sign somebody who's better than them and cheaper than them, guess what they're going to do? So I think our best option to move them is going to be during the season when injuries have already occurred and when bad players have already started to show themselves.
And we can increase their value by not playing them early.
Correct.
Because then you can trade them to someone in June, and they can play them
every day without having to worry about that vested.
Right. I'm going to say pick a number each month almost.
Yep.
Keep them under that number.
If we just platoon those two in left field the first half of the season, then we'll be in a situation where neither one of them is close to, even if they play the rest of the season as a full-time player, to getting that vesting option.
I'd like to see them play less than that. I'd like to see them be pinch hitters almost exclusively. And they're good veteran players. They can be that.
The only downside to playing them that little is we...
Or to pick up value.
Right. We want them to get a little bit of value so that we can move them.
And I mean, if they have 200 at-bats at the All-Star break, they're not going to be anywhere close to...
The downside to playing...
What's the? I'm sorry.
550.
Yeah.
So the downside to having them platoon in left field is the fact that we have Nick Swisher or Michael Bourne playing in left field and taking at bats for us. But that's going to be our best option to move them. I mean, I love both of them. They're great guys.
Bourne and Ciarte, and that's be fun to watch out there.
Yeah, that would be covering a lot of ground. I mean, Bourne has lost a step or two in his speed, but he can still. Bourne would be defensively not a bad left fielder, I don't think.
No.
You know? He's probably not got the speed to be a great defensive center fielder any longer, but you stick Inciarte out there and
it'll be fun.
It's almost like having Andrew Jones back out there.
Right.
I was
sacrilegious it may be fun.
I was looking for we're gonna do a third segment, and it's mailbag questions.
Pulling up the mailbag.
Do you want to do those now? You want to do them on the podcast, or
we can do them. But what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to stretch it out a little bit, so that I can get the questions pulled up.
I got the questions.
Oh, the Rob Porter questions.
Yeah, Rob
Porter. Rob's always good for some entertaining questions. Yeah, Rob, especially that third one.
All right, let's see. Rob,
I'm looking forward to hearing that one.
Rob P. from Atlanta asks, why are the Braves not working out a way for Oliveira to play second base?
Oliveira played second base when he was in Cuba. That was 10 years ago and 40 pounds ago. He is not, and I meant to look this up prior to starting this, he's 6'2", 225, 230 pounds. He's not a second baseman. They moved him to third base because he wasn't as smooth over there at the Keystone. Moved him to third base. The Braves didn't feel that he looked very good there. That's why they ended up moving him out to left field. They said he didn't look comfortable at third. A lot of us, you know, we just can't do what we did 10 years ago, and the same thing applies to him. He's bigger and less nimble, to be generous.
I mean, I assume they moved him from third to the outfield because he was – or trying to look at that because he was going to be – he was rough there.
Right. The reasoning was that I had spoken to –
you can't do third, why would you think
– I had spoken to David O'Brien, the Braves beat reporter, and he mentioned that that the Braves – and Oliveira were in agreement that he was uncomfortable at third base, was the way that he put it.
Right.
Which meant he couldn't move.
Right.
So. The Braves were uncomfortable, or he was?
Both.
Oh, then, you put him where he's comfortable.
Right.
When you're 30, you put him where he's comfortable.
Right.
I think part of it was and I didn't get into the specifics with David O'Brien, but I think some of it is that maybe, you know, Oliveira had rumors of elbow issues when he was being scouted in the Dominican leagues or in the Caribbean leagues prior to him being signed. And I don't know if maybe the throws were the issue, but I think it's more his agility. He's added 40 pounds in the years that he's been out of the Cuban league, and it's mostly muscle. He's a much bigger guy now than he was then. So I just don't think he's capable of playing second base as a 6 foot two, 220, 230 pound guy.
And we got Gordon Beckham.
And just we also have Jace Peterson
with Kelly Johnson.
Yeah.
Kelly Johnson again, that's right.
Kelly Johnson may end up being our —
can we sign him to a lifetime contract for the months of April through June?
Yeah. May as well.
Pre trade deadlines.
Kelly Johnson's gonna get 600 plate appearances. And he's going to do it at five different positions, probably.
He really likes early summer in Atlanta.
Right.
It's the time of year here is lovely. Yeah, I guess who's our... Adonis Garcia. Forgot about him.
Jeez, yeah.
Fun question. Who's older, Adonis Garcia or Hector Oliveira?
That's a good question. They're both 30-year-old Cubans with no major league experience. One of them is acceptable to a lot of Braves fans, and the other one should be sent down the...
Because the Dodgers paid him too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Garcia is older, maybe.
I'm going to say Garcia.
Garcia is younger by 0.1 years, whatever that is. Do that math.
A month, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's about a month. Yeah.
Well, the other reason that Oliveira won't play second base is because we have Jace Peterson, which brings us to the next question.
The second question. Second question is from Rob P. Again, Rob? Atlanta, wow. Georgia. Who's our catcher in 2017? Don't care about 2016. 2017, who's catching for the Braves?
Whoever's catching for the Braves in 2017, he's doing it for another team right now.
I think it could be Tyler Flowers.
Maybe.
I think he
will be catching games for the Braves.
I will say catcher that we received in the trade was it Arizona? The 17-year-old catcher? You're going to make me look this up.
Yeah, yeah,
the young guy,
Rico
Rodriguez, maybe? I think is his name. I'm going to have to look this up. But the catcher that we just got last month in the trade.
Right.
With,
I know you're talking about.
Hosed him. 17-year-old guy, great arm, good defensive catcher, bat is raw. But there's
probably
a lot of people.
Probably not seeing him in 2017, though, right?
No. Yeah. But, yeah, he's 17 years old and just signed.
But Flowers is catching some games for the Braves in 2017. And I bet Chris is right, too, that our primary catcher is playing baseball for somebody else right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we still don't know what we're doing with Bethancourt.
Right.
No, we traded him to the San Diego.
Well,
they don't know what they're doing with him.
Yeah.
They're not playing him.
That's actually who we got him from. That's where we got that young
guy.
So there's that.
I mean, I totally believed you that Dave Stewart had sent us yet another prospect along from Arizona, but that's...
We should make it a requirement that we call him first on every potential trade.
Is he Brave of the Year, Dave Stewart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, TJ had a great idea that we were talking about earlier. We should have called Dave Stewart and offered Miller back. Now we just call him and say, hey, look, we got Ender Inciarte. Do you want him back? We'll take Miller. And then we just keep trading him, Miller and Inciarte, for other players. Just keep getting their young players.
There's a very good argument that Inciarte alone is a better player than Shelby Miller.
What was the Capoella quote? It was that I'm getting way better offers for Inciarte than I ever was for Miller.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's a arguably better player and has an extra year of team control.
Right.
That's...
His arbitration is going to be less because pitchers make more in arbitration.
Right.
So even when that arbitration does hit, you know, Miller's going to go from, what did he go from? He's going to go from $500,000 to $5 million this year. Inciarte is going to, maybe, he goes to what, $3
million? Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's if he has a great year.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll be around 2.5, is my guess. But yeah, it's...
I'm going to enjoy watching him roam center field and left field and right field.
To get back to the catcher question, I actually think Tyler Flowers should play more than AJ this year.
I agree. I think a lot of people were spoiled by AJ's success last year. It was surprising. It was unexpected. And I would have to look, but I think last year was the second best offensive year of his career overall. Mm. And to expect that to happen at 38, 39 is just...
Yeah, it doesn't stick around.
Yeah.
He's a great backup, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for his own health. I don't think he should be playing every day.
Right.
Like, he should be... Let him play 40% of the game.
And at some point, we have to figure out something about these young players we have.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Flowers will also be really good for the young pitchers on the staff because he is an excellent pitch framer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something that gets lost a lot. You know, that didn't happen with either Betancourt or AJ last year, but... A lot of our pitchers last year could have been helped by having a Brian McCann type behind the plate who is really good at framing the pitches. You know, it doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're stealing an extra 100 pitches a year as strikes that are balls, that adds up. It's probably a good 10 runs a year overall that doesn't appear on an ERA, doesn't appear on a scoreboard.
That's right.
And that's something that Flowers is much, much better at.
He's very good at it. I'm happy to have him on the team. It also just goes a lot towards confidence for pitchers like that, sure. young pitchers, that when they can get those borderline strikes, they'll attack that border and
run. It's good to get from, I started reading about it months ago, but apparently it's really hard to coach.
Right.
Yeah.
It is.
I can see that. Question number three. This one from Robert P. from Atlanta, Georgia. Will Jace Peterson be traded?
I don't see why it would.
Well, I mean,
I see why he might be, but I've...
Because we traded anybody?
Because we'll trade anybody, right. But, I mean...
I don't think you're going to move him to make room for anybody.
No. And he's not more on the trading block than anybody else.
Well, and what's he going to bring back?
Right,
you know?
Right. Another Jace Peterson.
Why not just keep the one we have? Who's, you know, I think he. I'm not fond of Jace Peterson playing every day at second base, third base, shortstop, whatever. But I don't have any problem with him. If we had, if we lost a guy to injury, him playing, you know, 8, 10, 12, 15 games out there doing that. I mean, Jace Peterson is a guy who can, he just like Infante and some of the other guys we've had in utility roles over the years, he can be exposed when he's playing every day. But if you pick and choose the places to use him, you can take advantage of it. Plus his multi-positional flexibility, you know, his ability to play multiple positions gives Freddy Gonzalez options that he won't use later in the game.
Yeah, he's
his speed too. His speed base running is.
Yeah,
he's our best option now. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we won't dump him.
Him or Inciarte. Yeah,
yeah. I like Peter. I like his long term value to the team as a low cost, like top utility guy. Those are hard to. Well, they're not hard to find, but they're like good ones.
And the Braves have always had a guy like that. We had, you know, before he became a starter, Martin Prado was the utility. We had Omar Infante. We had Ramiro Pena was a great utility player for us in that role. Where he started getting exposed was when he started getting everyday playing time.
Yeah, Peterson's not. I don't think he's going to be the offensive player that those guys were, but I think he's a better defensive player than any of them.
He played very good defense last year. I was very pleasantly surprised with his. I don't want to say surprised. I was happy with his defense last year.
Yeah.
Fourth question. This one from R. Porter in Atlanta, Georgia. How many current Braves position players will still be on the roster at the end of 2016? I've got some players. Let's just go yes, no. At the end of this coming season, Ender Inciarte.
Yes.
Yes.
I also say yes. Eric Ibar.
No.
Yes.
He's in the last year of a contract?
Last year of a contract. He's a perfect rental for a playoff-bound team.
I'll say no. Nick Markakis.
Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately, yes.
You agree.
Freddie Freeman.
Freddie Freeman's going to be traded. We know that. He's going to be traded. It's going to happen. The Braves don't keep anybody. They trade everybody. Now, Freddie will be with the team.
Yeah, he'll be here.
Yeah, Freddie will be here, I think.
Although I can make an argument for why we should trade him after the 2016 season, but that's another...
Maybe another guy from Atlanta will ask that question at some point. Adonis Garcia.
Adonis Garcia will be a Brave at the end of 2016.
Yeah, I'll say he'll be here too.
Yeah.
I think teams would actually give us something very small for him. But
if he starts off hitting home runs again, trade him.
Yeah, I think the thing is I think some of Freddy Gonzalez and some of the other coaches are a little bit enamored with him. I think they got caught up in his opposite field home runs, and he did hit home runs well last year, but there is just no reason to think that's going to happen again. It didn't happen in the previous 10 years and 2,000 at-bats. Why is it going to happen now?
I'm going to change mine to just sort of a – because you never know with a guy like him which way he's going to go. I'm going to go no. I'm going to say he's DFA'd or, like, lost on waivers to someone or something.
Oh, I thought you just meant traded. Yeah, okay. I can see that.
Yeah. Still on the roster – at the end of the during the World Series of 2016, which we will probably not be participating in.
It wouldn't have changed any of my previous answers, except for maybe Garcia.
Yeah. AJ Pierzynski.
That's an interesting one.
He's got 1 year, too?
It's a 1 year deal.
The Braves don't have a whole lot of catchers that they could replace him with, but if Flowers is the way they're moving, I could see AJ being moved.
I'm going to say he's gone.
We re-signed LeVarnway.
Yeah.
If we did that, that gives us... Okay, that could move Flowers to the primary about halfway through the season. I could see a situation where AJ's gone.
I'll say no to AJ.
I'll also say no to AJ. Jace Peterson, I think we all answered that already. Yes.
Yes.
Michael Bourne?
No.
No.
I'm going to say... No. Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think we'll release those guys mid-season.
If they're not traded, they'll be gone.
Yeah. Tyler Flowers.
Yes.
Yes. Nick Swisher.
Nope.
No.
No.
Gordon Beckham.
No.
No.
Is this a one-year deal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then no. Actually, no. I'm going to say yes on Beckham. I'm going to say yes. Just because I think he's maybe sells some tickets more than a bench player might. a regular bench player, and
you're such a contrary.
And I'm, a Georgia boy.
And I'm also, but I'm also, I also don't think he's going to be good enough to trade.
Right. No, right. There's that too. Yeah.
So the guy's hit like two seasons in his.
Yeah, career. But he does play multiple positions competently.
Yeah. Emilio Bonifacio.
No. I think he's going to play his way off the team myself.
I can see that too. I'll say, I don't know. I'll say yes. We got to have somebody to back somebody up. Kelly Johnson.
Well, you can't say yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not allowed for him to finish the season as a Brave.
Yeah. No. I almost wonder if it's part of a, like a handshake deal too. I'll sign with you and you'll trade me in July. Yes. Because it was fun playing in the World Series this year. Yeah. I'd like to do that again. I guess there's not many Joey Tardoslovic. Do we want to?
Okay.
Sure.
That guy will never leave. I think that's about it. Okay. Well, that was fun. So we said lots of no's.
Yeah.
it's almost like this organization makes lots of trades. Right.
Is there any more questions?
There are more questions. Next question. This is from RP.
Is he from Atlanta?
He is from Sandy Springs, actually. When Angelton Simmons hits 25 home runs this year and the riots start, which restaurant chain will survive the franchise wars?
It's Arby's.
Arby's, is it the cockroach of the restaurant chain?
Yes. I'll keep them open.
Yeah. I don't know. Burger King's just keep... Subway's keep popping up everywhere, too. So
if it's fast food, I think Subway's the most franchises in the world.
Well, despite their own best efforts, O'Charlie's remain open everywhere. Pick O'Charlie's. O'Charlie's to.
Yeah, he didn't say fast food. He just said restaurant chain.
It's true. Yeah,
and Chipotle's killing all their customers. So.
Yeah, and I still see people going in there.
Yeah, so they're gonna stick around. Well, E. coli never killed anybody, right?
Final question. This is from Robbie Porter from Atlanta. How much are tickets to see the Gwinnett Braves?
Google it. I'm
going to find that.
Well, Mr. Porter, you can go to the AtlantaBraves.com and get a 20-game package to see them in the big stadium.
A top 10 Gwinnett Bravest tickets. I really hope that brings up something else, but unfortunately, no.
Yeah, that's one thing. The I will say this. The park for the Gwinnett Braves is a nice little park.
It's a fun trip out there.
Yeah, it's a good little trip. But you can see most of those players on your TV when they come up and play for Atlanta.
Right.
Because they're good
these
there.
Days.
Yeah. I think we went when Gwinnett opened, and I want to say we sat among the scouts right behind home plate for $15 a seat.
Yeah. I see. I think it's Living Social has deals on them every now and then for $8 for.
Last time we went, it was $7.
And there's not any real bad seats. Yeah, there's no bad seats.
Yeah.
So there you go, Robbie.
Nice. The MLB at Bat app has made it official. Braves signed Kelly Johnson to a 1-year deal.
Yep.
To a 5-month deal, more like.
Good to see them on top of things.
Anything else? Anything else we want to talk about? We'll save other topics for next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for sitting with us for this first rough cut of a podcast, which will be named later.
The Jeff Bagwell article.
Yeah, everybody go check out the Why Jeff Bagwell Should Not Make the Hall of Fame, an in-depth study article.
It's linked on the outfieldflyrule.com Facebook group.
Yeah, also, if you're on Facebook and know us through some other means, check out our Facebook group, Outfield Fly Rule, where we mostly just talk about the Braves and whatnot, but other topics do come up. Also, outfieldflyrule.com. Thanks for reading, and thanks for listening. And
have a good day, everybody.
Yep. Breaking news. Immediately, and I mean immediately after stopping the podcast and saying goodbyes, we got the update. Joey Tardoslovic has been claimed on waivers by the Orioles? The Baltimore Orioles. So, for...
Sleep easy.
For Roberto from Atlanta, our answer on Tardoslovic has been upgraded to no, he will not be on the Braves at the end of the 2016 season.
So thanks. Your claim about him never going away is actually...
Literally, that claim lasted 45 seconds or so from the moment it came out of my mouth. All right, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll see you or talk to you again. Bye-bye.